We're going to be able to ask Rob a bunch of questions. Race Taylor is in the audience. Raise your hand, Race.
I'm in the back.
He's in the
back. Right now, I'll be working my way through the tables, rubbing up against as many of you as possible.
He does that all the time. It's always a problem.
Right. Kind of like a dog in heat. I apologize.
I was talking to Rob upstairs, and actually he's moving into a new place, so I said, where's the Grammys? Apparently they're in some cardboard box somewhere, so I guess when you get that big, you can just throw them in a cardboard box. You know, nobody knows. They'll move them in, but I hope you like the CD, Something to Be. Those were the tracks, and if you guys are ready, are you ready? Come on, this is the intimate setting. Please welcome Rob Thomas.
My God. Hey, everybody. That was a hell of an intro.
You like that, huh?
Yeah.
Sit down, enjoy
yourself.
I felt
like I was coming out to play some sort of a sporting event.
Race, you in the back there? You all set?
I'm right here.
Okay.
Hey, everybody.
Nice to see you, Rob.
Hey, Race.
Wouldn't you say that the man is looking rather relaxed this close to the release date of his first solo CD? We're gonna barrage you with a bunch of questions, and we're gonna let some of these good-looking people who've been waiting here ask you a few. So,
is everybody having an okay time? Everything fine? Yeah. Have all of the PLJ people been very good to you?
Hey, how are you?
I wanted to be the first to actually wish you a belated Merry New York Christmas. I know I didn't get to say it to you this year, so actually I wanted to ask you in that song you mentioned Sidewalk Angels. So if you could talk a little about the Sidewalk Angels Foundation.
My wife. Actually started that foundation through because of that song and because of Blythedale. You know, we've gone to Blythedale, and you do that, like you do anything that's like something benevolent, something that feels good, and you feel like you just scratched the surface. So it gave us the opportunity. We wanted to do more. We do a lot of stuff with Pets Alive and up in Middletown, New York, and so it seemed like a way for us to maybe branch out and hopefully kind of spread goodwill, you know?
I heard that you keep referring to we when you're talking about the solo record.
Yeah, my wife keeps getting on me because everything I do is I'm like, oh yeah, well we just got out of the studio, and she'll smack me in the head. And I'm
just
like,
you?
No, sorry, I just got out of the studio. All right, like we're going on the road. And, oh, I'm going on the road. I'm sorry, I'm going on the road. I talked to Paul. I was like, Paul, I don't know what to do. I keep feeling like you're right here.
Race, you got a question in the audience?
I sure do. Let's go to our first person. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. Where are you from, Rachel?
Brooklyn.
All right.
Brooklyn.
You have a question for Rob. I have not had a chance to hear this question ahead of time, so I've not siphoned or filtered anything.
Yes, I have a question for Rob. To my left is my best friend, Heather, and it is her birthday today. She is 21.
Hi, happy birthday, Heather.
Hey.
And it would absolutely make her day and year if you could sing her happy birthday.
All right, I'll tell you what. I will lead happy birthday if everybody will agree to sing with me.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. You're going to have to stand up, birthday girl. I'm sorry.
Okay, ready?
You can't. You stand up. Come on. You're going to be serenaded by a Grammy winner and a bunch of schlubs who are almost drunk.
All right. Are you ready?
Happy birthday to you.
That's low.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Heather. Happy birthday to you.
Wait. Is it Rachel? Wait, stop.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Rachel. Happy birthday to you.
Very nice. We've covered now most of table number 47.
She's so drunk, she can't even stand up. Look at her.
It's crazy what happens when you get all these people
together.
She's
all foggy-eyed.
All right, before we go to the crowd for another question, we had a chance to hear some 8 of the 12 new tracks, which sound phenomenal. The thing we would like to know is, how do you personally decide, when you look at all these journals, of all the lyrics, of all the songs you've written, what's going to be a Rob solo song, what's going to be a Matchbox 20 song, or what's going to be a song that you give to Mick Jagger or Bernie Taupin or et cetera, et cetera?
I don't divide them that way. Like I try and make it where whenever I sit down to work on a project, whether it's someone else's project or my project or a Matchbox 20 project, that It just consists of the best of whatever I think the best that I've written up until that point. So I don't like to save songs for anything, and I don't like to hold them for anything. So, you know, for me, that was the hardest thing, was you write and you write and you write, and then you have one record and you put out 12 songs, and then you have like a year and a half that you just support that 12 songs. So of all the songs that you've written, you have to be really careful. And, you know, I can't trust myself, because I like everything that I write because I wrote it. So So literally, you know, the first line of defense is my wife. My wife goes through and she, you know, I'm like, honey, is this good? Is this, you know, is this record? Is this not record? And then once you have a couple of songs, like we had Lonely No More, and we had I'm an Illusion, and This Is How a Heart Breaks, and that started to kind of give a personality to the record, and like, oh, okay, I got a feeling what it's going to sound like now. And then you start to know, okay, this song fits this record, or this song fits this record. You know, and then I go, and Matt Cerletic, my producer, is a really great filter, because you got to have a good friend around you all the time to say, that sucks, you know? I mean, seriously, because you write and write and write, and what makes a good writer is realizing when something isn't good, you know, realizing, okay, this, I could do better than this, and so.
Excellent question.
All right. Very nice question.
Thank you very much. Excellent answer. Nice work.
Wow, that's a
fucking All right, hang on. We're going to delve into a little bit more of the songwriting. What's your name?
My name's Alan.
Hi, Alan. Rob.
I'll congratulate you on the album. It sounds
Thanks,
great.
Thanks, sir.
As an aspiring writer and musician, listening to your work is like going to school, and I want to thank you for that. I was hoping you could just pick one of the songs, anyone you like, on the new record, and just talk about the writing process a little bit that you go through. It'd be very interesting to me.
Yeah, you know, I'll pick Lonely No More, because that's one that everybody heard the most out of the new record. And it's, you know, like everything for me starts with a rhythm. You know, like I'll start with a good chord progression and let that kind of tell me where the melody goes. So for Lonely No More, originally I wanted to call it I Don't Want to Have to Pay for This, was the original title that I had. Because all I had was I don't want to have to pay for this. So, and for like a month, that's all you have. And you like become like a fucking human horn. You know what I mean? And you sound really, really cheesy for a while, right? And then it wasn't until like I came up with the idea of the title. The title Lonely No More came from a Kurt Vonnegut novel called Slapstick. Anybody who reads a lot of Kurt Vonnegut, he likes to put little drawings in his novels. And there was a little drawing in Slapstick with a button that said, Lonely No More. And I love that. And it made me think of the fact that I write way too many fucking songs with the word lonely. I'm lonely a lot. And I write way too many songs with the word angry. So I thought, okay, I don't want to be lonely anymore. And I don't want to be angry anymore, because I can't write about these two things any fucking more. So literally, it was a kind of tongue-in-cheek thing that started that thing.
There you go.
Good question.
Now, of course,
Rob
does the Blythedale broadcast every year. You guys heard it, pretty much, right? Come on. He's pretty much there every year. We enjoy having him
it's
there. I'm
nice
sure the
there.
Kids do, too. So this year, we had John Mayer there, too.
John
is actually on one of the songs on Rob's CD. So if you could talk about how you met him and all that.
You guys played that song, right? It was on there,
yes.
Right? One of the last two songs, a Street Corner Symphony, the Come On Over Down, that was John Mayer, who played guitar all through that and played the solo on that. And right, ladies and gentlemen, John Mayer, because John Mayer is 9 feet tall. A lot of people don't know that. He is. You know, that's one of the reasons I moved to New York was for that reason, because when you're off of the road, so many musicians live here, so many people, so many writers, so many producers. And that was a great example. John had moved here, and we got together at like a party, and I was like, man, I'm making a record down the street. Do you want to come over and record? And a lot of people, he's such a good songwriter, and he's such a good singer, that people don't realize that he's probably one of our best guitar players that are out there. He's probably one of the best guitar players I've heard in a decade. So it was really amazing to have him. And another, there's a song on the record called I Am an Illusion that it's important to point out. There was a slide, like a pedal steel solo going on, and that was a guy named Robert Randolph from Robert Randolph and the Family Band. And if you guys haven't picked up a Robert Randolph CD, you really should, because he's like our next, he's like my generation's Eric Clapton. He's pretty amazing, so.
Oh, yeah.
Race?
Yes, we are at the China Club for the Rob Thomas World Premiere Party.
Hey, are we on the air? Because I'm cursing like a sailor.
We beep it all out. Don't worry.
All right, cool.
That's all right. We have a giant bleep button. It says easy on it, just like on the television commercial. This first request is actually for the left side of the room. I'm in the back on the right side of the room.
Hey.
But all the women over there
Race,
would like...
you have a sexy voice, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Can I tell you that? Doesn't he?
Please.
Every day, like, it just kind of comes through the radio and touches me.
Thanks. I'm using my I'm talking to Rob on the phone voice.
Listen, I love it, baby.
If it's not too much trouble, could you two switch seats so the women on the other side of the room could see Rob? Because right now they're blocked out by the speaker. Thank you very much. Now, Rob, if you could stand on that seat and slowly begin to disrobe.
I'm sorry, guys.
Okay. Here we have another question from the far side of the room.
I'm drawn like a moth to flame.
Don't look into the light. Don't look into the light. What's your name?
It's Mike.
Mike, where are you from?
New Milford.
And your question for Rob Thomas.
First, Rob, how are you doing?
Hey, Mike.
The album sounds amazing, and my
Thanks.
Wife loves you. I've always heard that people say that a sophomore album is harder to make, per se, than the first one. Did you find that making a second album with Matchbox 20 harder or easier than making your first solo album?
You know, I lucked out in that the first record with Matchbox 20 was kind of my second record because, you know, usually when you make your first record, you spend your whole life writing and writing and writing, and then you get signed, and you have that first record to kind of put what you feel your best songs you've written up to that point are. But I was in another band before this, a band called Tab of the Secret, and we had just a fucking nasty falling out. And at the end of it all, it seemed a lot easier to me to just go and rewrite a bunch of new songs. So with the exception of 3 AM, we went and wrote a whole new record. So the first Matchbox 20 record was kind of like my sophomore record. It was me having 6 months or so to go and write a record. And the solo record just kind of felt like a continuation. The thing I liked about the solo record was that I got to put songs on this record that the guys in Matchbox wouldn't let me put on the last record. Quite frankly, you know, like, because it's hard. Everybody writes stuff, and everybody has their own opinion of things they like, and you're trying to make it fit into an album that everybody likes. And so, like, I Am an Illusion is one of my favorite songs, and I remember I played it for Paul, and Paul was just like, "Dude, I don't get it," you know. And I was like, "Well, screw off," and so, but I get a chance to put it here, and then Paul calls me back and he's like, "That's a really cool song, man." I'm like, "Ah, where were you?" We done that with the Willie Nelson record as well. Like Recollection Phoenix was a song that I wrote for Willie Nelson, and I played it like with a band. We sat down for like 2 days trying to figure out the way to do it. We played it like a salsa song, and we played it like a rock song. We played it every possible way you could play it, and then we just didn't do it. And like a year later, it wound up on the Willie Nelson record, and Paul comes to me. He's like, "Well, we could have done that." Well, yeah, we could have done that. So for me, I think it was easier because I had these songs that I've been dying to put somewhere.
The rumor is, there's a rumor going around, I don't know if Rob can confirm this or not, that it's possible that Rob Thomas could be doing a tour with this record.
Oh, I am. No.
Oh.
That would be a shitty answer, wouldn't it? Yeah, definitely. To me, like, I don't believe it counts unless you do it live, you know?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
I think that you make a record and you do all of the things that you do that come along with making a record so that you can go out and do that record live. Like, it doesn't count. If you can't do it live, you shouldn't do it in the studio. It doesn't matter. So it's a big deal to me, I think. I'm doing a club tour first. And at the end of April, at some point, and somebody from Atlantic is floating around that would know the date. But no. That's the Save the Music show. But I'm doing a show at Irving Plaza at the end of April. And that'll be like the first New York thing that we're going to do. And then when I get back from going overseas, I'm going to plan hopefully a proper, like a theater tour or something.
All right, here's a question actually that maybe you don't have an answer to. But if I recall seeing you in the past, you were very respectful to the guys in the band. I don't think I saw you play Smooth ever with the guys from Matchbox 20. Will you, on a tour like this, when the drunk guy in the third row is going, 3 a.m., man, play 3 a.m., Will you, on a Rob Thomas solo tour, play any Matchbox 20 music?
You know, I beat myself up about that question, actually. Here's the way I look at it. I will play different versions of Matchbox 20 songs. I'll play my maybe acoustic on the guitar or on the piano. You have to imagine that, Unwell is, I use this Unwell as the example all the time because it's an easily remembered lick. But I wrote Unwell, and I wrote, I could play it for you. I could sit down and I could play you Unwell. But the intro of Unwell, that, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that's Kyle Cook, because he's a great guitar player and he's a great songwriter, and he wrote that lick. And so for me to go out with another guitar player and have him play Kyle's lick, that would be wrong. So every now and then, I'll play different songs on different nights, and I'll, pull out some stuff that I haven't played in a long time. But I just probably won't do it with the whole band, because that to me feels like, it's not just cheating. It's like cheating in your wedding tux. You know what I mean? It's like.
All right, we're talking to Mary. We're in the center of the room. I know you can't see with all the lights. Mary, where are you from?
Upstate New York.
All right, Mary's all the way from upstate New York, and
hello.
She has perhaps one of the most riveting, important questions for every woman in the room.
Exactly. When did you cut your hair? Are you going to grow it back?
The scandal.
That's right. When did you cut your hair?
Maddie and I were walking along in a hot New York summer day, and I had hair down past my shoulders at this point. Because I'm just lazy. I don't have any hair plan. I let my hair grow until I can't stand it anymore, and then I try and cut it to Boys Don't Cry short, and then I just let it grow back down to my ass again. And so it was just hot, man. It was so hot, and I was like, honey, I'm just going to shave it. And I literally, on the way back, I stopped at an Eckerd's and bought a wall shaver, and ever since then, I've just been shaving it. And the best part about it, guys, if you're into this and you want to shave your head, you cut down on your mirror time substantially, all right? I know exactly what the hell I look like when I wake up in the morning until I go to bed. I don't have to look in the mirror once. I know exactly what's going on all up here. It's a good feeling.
Excellent answer.
It looks good. It looks very good, though, just so you know.
You mentioned it once before earlier. You said the VH1 Save the Music Benefit Concert. That's going to be April 11th at
April
the
Beacon 11th,
Theater.
Yeah, that's going to be great.
It's going to air on VH1, I think, on the 17th, a couple days later. So you get to see Rob on VH1. But how did you get involved with Save the Music Foundation?
We've been doing a lot with VH1, since we started our career. They've been really good to us. And Save the Music, I think, is one of the most important things that are out there. Music Cares is another great organization. But to me, Save the Music, for a lot of people that don't know, Save the Music is all about getting money and getting funding for music in schools. And that is a really important thing, especially if you can understand the idea of being an 8-year-old kid, an 8-year-old girl who's the next Alicia Keys, and will never know it because she can't afford a piano, or she can't afford piano lessons, or she wants to take clarinet in high school, but she can't do it because she can't afford to buy the clarinet, and she has to buy the clarinet because the school can't afford to provide the instruments for her. And VH1's raised $3 million for New York City schools and brand new instruments, in schools up in Harlem and a lot of these underprivileged schools. And so I think it's one of the best charities out there, and it's because it puts a focus on the arts, and I think that's really important because it's art that makes you human. Do you know what I mean? It's you need cognitive skills and you need math and you need reading, but studies show that people who play music are also better at math and better at English and better at science. And so I think it's really important to try and find out who these talented people are and give them the opportunity to shine. So
Rob is also doing that show with Jon Bon Jovi. Among others, Josh Stone. What's your relationship with Jon Bon Jovi? You met him once before, right?
I've met him a number of times, man. He's one of the nicest guys, really talented guy. You got to respect Jon.
Race?
Thanks. We're in the middle of the floor working our way towards the front. By the way, about a year ago, you were on the road with Maroon 5, who at that point in time didn't have a lot of airplay.
No, those guys are huge rock stars. They don't return my call.
Absolutely. They're giant right now. Who will open for a Rob Thomas concert?
Well, that's a good question. If I went out on this club tour, I'm taking out Beth Hart. Do you guys know Beth Hart?
Oh yeah.
She is a monster, and she's gonna come out on this club tour just because she's a friend of mine, and I just think she rocks. There's been talk if on the next tour, the real tour, maybe there's a group called Antigone Rising. I'm not sure if anybody knows about the Antigone Rising girls yet, But they're a girl group out of Jersey, and I produced a couple tracks for them and wrote a couple tracks with them. And these girls are badass Jersey girls, man. So whether they open up or not, you guys should pick up an Antigone Rising CD. I think it's really good.
Excellent. We're at the China Club. It's a Rob Thomas World Premiere Party. Rob needs
a Heineken,
please.
Heineken, it's all about the music. That's right. It's all about the beer. Heineken.
Thank you.
Nice.
Nicely done.
Little plug in there for Heineken.
Couple more of those, and we'll have them on the stool on top there, removing the clothing. That was a request earlier.
Quick.
Your name is?
Daria.
Where are you from, Daria?
New York.
Your question for Rob Thomas.
Hey. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
I want to congratulate you.
Thank you very much.
Wish you a belated happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Oh, look at that.
My question is, a lot of your music is very deep, you know, I mean, as far as like emotion. Are you drawing that from your own personal experiences, or are you taking it from other people around you?
I don't mean any of it. A lot of it is, and especially this record, my wife and I had a crazy 2 years, basically. Like, she had been really ill for a while, and it's really on this record, a lot of it. Songs like Ever the Same and songs like My, 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 they kind of reflect directly what we've gone through for the last couple of years. Sometimes they're the opposite, you know. Sometimes they're, like, songs like this, How Heartbreaks or I'm Illusion, are a break away from that, you know, trying to forget about that for a little while. And sometimes you just use one line will be your entire, like, everything comes from that one line that you know, that's the only personal thing to you. But you start the whole song with that one line, and then it kind of grows from there. But I think everything has a personal seed, you know, like everything starts somewhere personal. Sometimes, you know, it's just the melody, like just in the way that you can hear just a guitar with no vocal, and it just makes you feel good, or it makes you feel sad, or it makes you feel happy. That's the way it is when you write a song. And Alan, right? Alan, was that right, Alan? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about? The idea of when you when you're writing the song, when you start, just the chord progression gives you a mood, do you know, like, and it makes you happy or it makes you sad, and you kind of feel that rhythm, and then that, if you just shut up for a second in your head and listen to it, it tells you what you're writing about, you know what I mean, it'll give you a line, it'll just speak to you, and I think that's, sometimes writing a good song is thinking as little as you possibly can and just kind of being a receiver.
What is the band's initial reaction when you first go to them and say, you know, I think I'm going to do a solo record? I mean, what is the band's initial reaction?
They were really happy because I've been getting a big head, and
they want to get rid of you for a little while.
No, you know, we for like 10 years now. It's been, we were in the studio and then we were on the road and then we go in the studio and then we go on the road, and we're a touring band, and so somewhere in between that time, everybody had kids and wives and lives and like a whole garden that never gets tended to. You know what I mean? And everybody was really, really ready. The only odd thing is that everybody had this chance to finally take a break, and everybody's making a record, man. Paul Doucette is our drummer, and Paul and I rule the band with an iron fist. And okay, I'm lying. Paul rules the band with an iron fist, but he just made a really amazing record that's going to come out soon. And Kyle Cook has a band called The New Left, and he's been traveling around the Southeast with those guys And so I think everybody was just ready. You know, everybody wanted to go home. Everyone wanted to kind of do their own thing for a little bit, because everything that we've done professionally has just been the five of us. That's all we've had a chance to do. And like, if I were Paul and I were a great songwriter and a great, you know, musician and all these things that Paul does well, I would be kind of upset too if all I did was I was the drummer for Matchbox 20. So he needed that chance to kind of go out and show people what a great songwriter he is. And so it was a good time. Like, nobody's hurting because I'm doing a solo record, and that's a good feeling. So, okay.
Race,
thank you very much. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Kathy.
Kathy, we're talking with Rob. Look, here,
Kathy.
We are, right in the front couple rows.
Hi, Kathy.
So we're right in the light. He can't really see you. Maybe we should stand up.
No, I see you're fine.
Okay, your question is?
I just wanted to know, are you going to be making another weird video?
Well, which was the last weird video?
One with the dog?
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
But can I just say, by the way, I hate that fucking dog. I do. We went back and forth about that damn dog, and the rest of the video I thought was pretty good. I have no idea why the dog popped up, but somehow when it was all said and done, and we're like, you got to know, like, we're a band that sweats everything. And we're like, we're crazy about like who the director is and what kind of film he's shooting and who the cinematographer is. And we want to see the storyboards and we want to know everything. And somehow, when the video was done, we all like sitting on the bus one day and none of us liked the damn dog. And we're like, well, why is it in the video? How did that wind up? Well, none of us like the name Matchbox 20 either. So I guess we just don't have communication. We have no communication in the band. That said, yes, I've just finished a very weird video.
Yeah. Hey.
Hopefully soon. There's a Joseph Kahn is a director, and we shot it, and it's a lot of effects. And so I just saw the first edit, but the first edit is just a green screen and a lot of me. You guys, I go on the website to see what everybody in the GD is up to, see what all the fans are up to. You guys have got the album cover. You guys know all the songs. You got pictures from the video shoot online. Man, that's pretty impressive. You guys are scary impressive. Very nice. Very nice.
Right now, for a lot of people, whether it's Matchbox 20 or Rob Thomas as a solo artist, you are creating a lot of first memories for people and radio. Sorry, I'll stand up, but I'm so afraid. I really don't want you to look at this part of me if you're behind me. What is your earliest radio memory? As a songwriter, it's almost like the bonus. I mean, the gift is you get to make money and do what you do and survive. The bonus is, oh my God, I'm on the radio. How cool is that?
Well,
is your first radio memory?
This is going to sound like a bunch of shameless ass licking, but it's not at all. You know what I really like about PLJ is it has that memory for me of like, you know, when you're a kid, you're like 14 years old, you're driving down the road and you would hear Fleetwood Mac, Tom Petty, then you'd hear Al Green, then you'd hear Bobby Brown. You know what I mean? Like there was much more of a free form going on, and that's what I remember. I remember radio having not, there wasn't a format. You know, it wasn't so regimental. And to me, I don't know that I would be a songwriter like I am if it was. Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of hard, especially. It makes you want to encourage as many like budding songwriters. To you know, you got to listen to the radio. You want to know what's going on. You want to know like your place, but you got to go out also and find some more music. You know, you got to go on the internet. You got to go, you know, find new bands, find unsigned bands. Like really go out, you know, because there's not a lot of stations that are doing what you guys are doing. Not a lot of stations can cover that amount of ground and can play something that old and something that new. Not a lot of people can play Matchbox 20 and Elton John on the same playlist. You know, so that's what I remember.
I actually got a call today. A listener wanted me to ask you this. Any acting in your future?
No.
I'll report that back tomorrow. Race.
Yes, we're in the front row. Your name is?
Mary.
Mary, your question.
That would be here. I was just wondering, with Matchbox 20, you know, I love you guys, and how much you guys have done so much, but I was...
You have to talk into this part. Here, I'll move far away.
Just let me have it. I was wondering, for promotional stuff, I know you're doing all the radios and stuff, but there's things that you didn't do with Matchbox 20, such as Saturday Night Live, cover Rolling Stone, in-store promotion stuff.
Well, you know, like a lot of that stuff, like Saturday Night Live, we didn't do because we were up our own ass, and we decided it was the season that they asked us. Well, they asked us twice to do Saturday Night Live, and they put us on hold. And like, you know, you're on hold for this date. And the date would come around, and we would get bumped for like Mariah Carey or Jay-Z. So finally, they came back a third time, and they're like, we want you to do this date. And we were like, no, fuck you. We're not going to do it. But then the problem is, you know, that it just kind of looks like, well, we didn't do Saturday Night Live. Rolling Stone is another great example. You know, they kept coming to us like three or four times for me to do the cover of Rolling Stone. But they would never come and ask for the band to do the cover of Rolling Stone. Well, now that I'm solo, I might have used up all my wishes on Rolling Stone. So you can only turn them down so many times. If they were to come to me and ask me for the cover, I would do it now because I have a solo record and it's not infringing. With Matchbox, it was a big deal because we had spent so many years traveling to the van and working and staying away from our families and having to like take a break from our lives that everybody had the right to be on the cover of Rolling Stone, you know? And so it just didn't seem right for any of us to do that.
Nice.
Virgin Megastore, would you do something like that? Like J-Lo just did?
What is Virgin Megastore? Would you go to the Virgin Megastore and meet a bunch of people?
Well, yeah, so stuff like that. And we've done a couple of those, actually. You know, like, we're not, that's, usually the only reason we can't do those is just because it's hard to get us all in one place at the same time. Like, I'm, you know, I just worked out a deal with Target to do a commercial for my record. And that was a big deal for me because I didn't want to do a commercial for Target, and I didn't want them to, you know what I mean? Like, but they're really great, and you guys have seen a lot of those Target commercials for the new albums that come out, and I think they're great, and I think they do a really good job with Lenny and with Brittany and Christina. Yeah, right now. Oh my God, did you see that? What the fuck is that?
Wait, just...
Hey, baby.
Have you seen the Burger King commercial? Do you know who we're talking about? Right. Okay, sorry.
Is Marty back there? What yeah. about that? That Darius Rucker Burger King commercial.
Oh my God.
My wife and I were freaked. We're just like, oh my God.
I'm fearing the uprising.
He's singing about chicken or something.
Yeah, that scared
right?
that man. You know, here's the deal. Darius is a really, really nice guy and a really talented guy. And this, nothing against him as a person, but oh my God. I oh my God. Yeah. That scared the hell out of me. That scared the hell out of me when I saw that.
Would you talk to Oprah? Will you talk to Oprah?
To Oprah?
That's right. She'll probably ask.
I could talk to Oprah?
Yeah? Will you go on Oprah?
I was on Oprah.
Yeah, we saw you.
I was on BB Winans' ticket. It wasn't my ticket.
Right.
Of course I would do Oprah, man. Oprah rocks.
Yeah,
she
could own all of us, I think. Would you let Jamie Foxx play you in a movie called Rob?
Nice.
Just curious. It did wonders for Ray. Not that you need any help, but still.
Well, now I'm thinking hopefully that like that will happen later in my career, and I'm really looking forward to Kieran McCulkin. I'm thinking that kid, you know? Right. He's young now, but he's getting older, and I think he's going to be a good age for me.
All right, one question from the front, then I'm moving towards the back of the room. What's your name?
Joanne, and regardless of what everyone else thinks, I am your biggest fan. My question to you, I finally found in More Than You Think You Are an album that I would take on a desert island if I was stranded. What would you bring with you?
Oh, that's a good question, man. Wow. Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. What do you say? Like, what's the one record that I could bring with me? You know, somebody just said that it's true, man, actually. One of them is Pink Floyd, The Wall, I think. Yeah, that's probably one of the greatest records ever made. The other one for me is probably Paul Simon, Graceland. Yeah, to me, I think that's a flawless record.
You wouldn't take the Hootie Burger King commercial with you?
In the big rock and the mountains, buy yourself a burger. That's scary. It is scary. Guys, don't laugh, man, because there but the grace of God go all of us. All right?
It is the Rob Thomas World Premiere Party. We are at the China Club. We've got about 100 people in a small room. It's hot. It's sweaty.
This is a nice turnout you guys have pulled
it's
out
intimate.
Here. This is very nice.
That's right. By the way, give yourselves a round of applause for some excellent questions. Without a doubt, the smartest audience we've had here in months. We really mean that. And here's another important musical question. What's your name?
My name's Debbie. Hi, Rob. I love you.
Hi, Debbie. How are you doing?
And your music and your art.
Thanks.
I have an important question. Who's going to be touring with you?
You mean as a band?
Your players, yes.
You know, that's the only one that's actually on the record that's planned is Gerald Hayward, who's our drummer. But there's another guy, Matt Beck, who was the keyboard player for Matchbox 20. And he's going to be my musical director for this entire tour. So he's actually auditioning guitar players now. That because, you know, you can't go, like, I can't do the American Idol audition, right? So he's going through, like, the 100, you know, really bad and okay and great guitar players. And we're going to narrow it down to, like, a good 10 great guitar players. And I get to try and pick through them. That's the weirdest thing ever, you know, is having, you know... I have a really, really good band. Do you know, we weren't a great band when we started, but over the years and touring for year after year, I play with a great band, a great live band. Brian, Kyle, Paul, they're amazing players. And so I forgot until I started to make this record how comfortable I had gotten with that. Do you know, like when you go in and you can just throw a song at these guys and they make it sound really, really good. And I went into this record and I like threw a song at, you know, and they're kind of waiting for me to tell them what to do because they're such good players that they're just waiting for me because I'm supposed to know what the hell I'm doing too. And I was like, oh shit, I don't know what I'm doing and I have to learn really quickly. So that's my hardest thing right now is I'm going through this band. I'm trying to find the best band. I have a drummer and I have a bass player right now. That's all I'm working on.
When you narrow down the musicians, will you do it American Idol style?
I'm going to make three of them stand up. I'm going to be like, you're out, and you're out. You're safe.
Congratulations. You're going to Westchester. All right, we're in the middle of the room. What's your name?
My question is, when did you decide you wanted to do this for a living? When did you start writing songs?
I was like 14, I guess. Yeah. I used to, it was my only means of picking up girls, you know? Because I grew up in the South, and I can't fix cars, and I don't know, I don't know anything about sports, you know? And so, like, as far as the South goes, I'm kind of a pussy, and, but luckily, while the football players would pass out and drink their beer bongs, I was playing piano for their girlfriends. And, So I would, it would start just like that. It was like bad Lionel Richie songs, you know, like my version of Penny Lover, you know, like something like that. It was pretty bad. But, and hopefully it's progressed.
Well, along those lines, you were saying Push came out. Yep. And at what point do you realize that, you know, oh, we're going to make this. It's going to be big.
It kind of works the opposite way. Like when Push comes out, you think, oh, we're huge. You know, we have a, because you come from, your frame of reference is local band. You're in a local band. All of a sudden, you have a song on MTV. You have a song all over the radio. You're selling some records. And you're like, we are the biggest rock stars that have ever walked the face of the earth. No one's ever sold records before. No one's ever been on MTV before. That's impossible. And then if you're lucky enough to do it for a while longer, you go, oh shit, wait a minute. This is kind of an everyday occurrence. And you have to change your whole perspective and you have to decide that you want to work at becoming a better musician. You want to work at becoming, you know, a better songwriter, make better records. And that's kind of been the place that we're at now is it's a humbling experience to do this in this arena, you know? Because you, like, we're fortunate enough to go to a lot. You go to, like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, and you can think you're a big shot because you sell some records, but then you go sit in front of fucking Elvis Costello or the Police for an hour, and you go, oh, shit, I got to learn a lot. I've still got a lot to learn. All right, fine.
What was actually on your resume before Push as far as other jobs? What did you do growing up? You didn't work at Burger King, did you?
Man, no. I did. The only fast food job I ever had, there's a fast food chain in Florida called Vizzoli's, right? And it's like an Italian fast food. I worked there one day, and I had to wear this little red hat. And as I'm working there, one of my friends from high school that had graduated came in, and he was wearing a suit, and I'm wearing a little red hat. And I walked out. I was like, yeah, no, this isn't me. But I've driven trucks delivering beds. I've been a roofer. I've done like every construction job you can do. I've hung drywall. I've been a roofer. I've been a painter.
Well, that might help now. You got a new house, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly, man. Well, oddly enough, I'm not a handy guy. Yeah. But you know why? Because I did all these jobs. I got paid for them, but I didn't do them well. You know, like I could work on your roof, but you would have some stuff messed up. Yeah. I wasn't a roofer by any means, and I would get in fights with them too because they would yell at me because I'm not a good roofer, and I'd be like, "Well, okay, I'm 20, you're 40, leave me alone. I'm not a roofer."
Ray, see you out there.
Yes, right here on your left. All right, your name is?
My name is Kim.
Music question, Kim, where are you from?
Hi, Kim.
I'm from Teaneck, New
That's
Jersey.
That's my friend Kim.
Yes. Thank you, Rob. You know I love you. I just wanted to know from the first Matchbox 20 record, one of my favorite songs is "Hang." And I wanted to know why I've never heard you sing it live at any of the concerts and why it's never been on any of the DVDs.
But we have.
You have?
We have played it. You just haven't heard it.
Yeah. Why have I missed it?
You know why? Because that's one of the songs, it's like a swing song. You know, like you play it like every four or five nights. You know, you don't play it every night. So on certain nights when it's a good night and we want to make a long show, we pull out Hang. And we've actually done like 3 or 4 different versions of Hang at this point, right? So yeah, we actually did do it. And it didn't make the DVD because we didn't do it that night. But we actually did do Hang quite a few times.
Last time we were here with Rob at the China Club, it was for an 80s songwriters benefit, a VH1 concert that Rob hosted. He had a chance to talk to some 80s songwriters, and he mentioned at another gig, which was a Pets Alive benefit, about testing out the fatherhood waters with a dog. Women love dog stories. What's the name of your dog?
Tyler.
What kind of dog is Tyler?
Tyler, it's a special breed. It's a German breed called the best friggin' dog in the world. Is he back there, baby?
I saw him.
Where'd he take him? Oh, Tyler's here somewhere, floating around.
Well, we need a Tyler story. We need a Tyler. There's got to be a Tyler story somewhere.
Okay, here's a story. Hey, Dayon, bring Tyler up here for a second. So here's a story on Tyler. Guys, listen, I'm going to tell you this story really quick. This is a no-bullshit story. Our boy Tyler, when he was a little puppy, was a... Oh, my boy!
Tyler is wearing a Gucci sweater.
No, but my wife did buy this at Barney's. He's a spoiled little dog. But here's why. When we... Oh, he'll be all right. Yeah. He's a rock star dog. He's my boy, Tyler. Tyler. Tyler was sexually abused by a man in West Virginia when he was a puppy. That's not a joke. It's not funny. But we... And he was almost put to sleep because it messed him up inside, and the people at Pets Alive in Middletown, New York, actually Sarah Whalen is the people at Pets Alive, by the way, she heard about his story and drove to Virginia and picked him up, came back, paid for his operation, and we adopted him from Pets Alive, and he is the greatest dog in the world. Come here, Tyler. Come here, boy.
Great story. By the way, if you are a man in this room and you can hear our voice, there have been no more ooing and aahing or photos taken than the moment that Rob was seen with the dog. So if you're having trouble picking up women, life partners, whatever, get yourself 3 Grammys and a cute
and
dog.
A dog. No, a you don't. Band. You don't even need the Grammys, man. My wife and I's big joke is I'm walking. I'm like, honey, this dog's a chick magnet. Like, you think, like, rock star might be one thing, but you get a cute dog on your arm, and everybody wants you, man. Especially a cute dog and a sweater more expensive than mine. Tyler.
What's it like when the Songwriters Hall of Fame call you, and they say, hey, we got an award for you. We got something for you.
That's pretty cool. That to me, I think, is, you know, the biggest deal. Being like songwriting to me is like the most magical part of what I do because it's the only part that I can't explain. Do you know? You like, I've learned over the years how to be a better piano player. I've learned how to be a better guitar player. I have a great vocal coach, and over the years, and over the like strengthening my vocals of touring, like I learned how to become a better singer. The only thing that I don't know how I've learned is how to be a songwriter because I don't think you can learn it. I believe you're either tuned into that frequency or you're not. You know, because to be a songwriter, your job is to hear songs that don't exist yet. You know, you sit in a room, and everything's quiet, and then you listen to a melody that comes into your head, and then you write it, and it becomes something. And that to me is freaking magical. Like that, it is. It's a gift. It's a gift that I'm not responsible for, and I don't think any songwriter is really responsible for. And so, you know, we've seen that you can build pop stars. Like I'm a huge American Idol fan. I'm not gonna lie, but. But it's shown that you can build a pop star. It's very easy to do. I don't believe you can build a songwriter. I believe you're either born or you're not a songwriter. So to me, anything that has to do with that is a really big honor. And then on top of it, you know, I'm there that night with all these amazing people, Michael McDonald and Daryl Hall, who I think is just a genius, and, you know, all of these people. And to be up there with them and having them slap you on the back is a really good feeling.
We are just about maxed out on time. Rob and his dog stealing the show. Here's the question, and we get this.
You
no
go
matter,
ahead, boy. Don't worry about it.
No matter who we're talking to, if you're talking to Sting, the diehard Police fans are. When is everybody going to get back together? if you're talking to Timberlake. I think the dogs, by the way, having more fun than anyone in the room right now. And I don't think you need a photo of that. Unless you're going to work on being double jointed at home later.
I'd never get to see that.
Win for everyone who just
can't wait. Hey, baby, do you want to get him? Because I worry about him. He's nervous.
Right. The rescue is on the way. Before we let you go, and I know this calendar is always changing, it's always evolving, and there's no way to predict the future. For the diehard Matchbox 20 fans who are already nervous because they read a blurb about Adam or whatever, is there a projected date? Is there a calendar time? Is the hiatus for everyone's personal projects a two-year calendar or?
There's not a date, but it. I don't believe there's ever a doubt that we're gonna get back together and make a record. Like we've done something that a lot of people don't get to do, which is not only have we got to do something for a decade that means something to us, but it's managed to transcend and mean something to other people. Very few people get that opportunity in a million years to do something like that.
Absolutely.
And all of, like, everything that we've done, all the songs, all the shows. I mean, you remember the last show. Like, I wanted to cry. It was really a sad thing, not because I didn't think we were going to come back, but because I love it up there. I love it with those guys. I love playing those songs. I love playing in front of you guys. So it will happen. We don't know when, but we talk a lot. You know, we're still in constant contact. I'm the only person in the world I know of right now that has Paul Doucette's solo record. And so it's definitely something that's going to happen. It's just something that we're decided not to put, you know, a time on, because I'm having a really good time doing this, you know, and I want to give it its a complete chance. I want to give it a life, and I want to go on the road with a different band, and I want to enjoy that for a while so that when I come back, we're all completely free of anything we wanted to do.
Based on what we heard tonight, there's no doubt that success as a solo artist is shining bright in your future. Congratulations. Rob Thomas, everybody. Rich Kaminsky has all the details on the drop date for Something to Be.
That would be April 19th, right? It's coming up?
April 19th, it is. And guys, I just want to say, Tom, I mean, thank all of you guys. PLJ, you guys are always wonderful to me and to us, and thank you very much. Very
thank
nice.
You for being such a wonderful friend to the radio station. We'll see you at Irving Plaza. We'll see you at the Summer. We'll see you at Blythedale. And the best part is knowing that all you got to do is turn on the radio, and you're right there, brother. Rob Thomas.
Thank you guys very much. Thank you guys. Have a great night.